Thanks for listening to Ace on the House on Podcast One.
Yeah, we talk hoops on Robert Horry's new podcast, The Big Shot Bob Pod.
I would have loved to play with LeBron because if you get down, get open, get to where you're supposed to be, he's going to find you. Feel like he got robbed for MVP.
But with Robert Horry, we cover the floor and we talk about everything. And so your youngest is a teenager.
So he's not going to high school right now. He's doing everything via Zoom. And he's, Dad, can you help me? Nope, I'm running away. I'm running.
From the team that brought you the big podcast with Shaq, it's The Big Shot Bob Pod. Coming your way soon on the Podcast One app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, livebylive.com, and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.
Well, we talk about getting off the grid with an expert, Gary Collins, in today's show.
And you bring up a very interesting legal conundrum. If you're firing a gun hopped up on tequila, you have to yell what again?
Go
to
on!
Not get arrested?
Get! All right, first let me tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you'd probably do one or the other. Let's bundle. You have your automotive policy, you have your homeowner's insurance, you have your renter's insurance. Geico makes it easy to bundle. So you go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. Take that renter's, that homeowner's, the auto insurance, put it all together, put it all under one roof, and save at Geico. That is geico.com.
This is Corolla Digital.
A master carpenter who's here to help you out. If you can't fix it, then let A show you how.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice. But
the people have to get it on.
Welcome to Ace on the House. Matt Corolla, that's Erica Stromer over there.
That's
Pete.
Right. Not to be confused with the Eric Estrada, great chip star.
Oh, but it wasn't just chips. I mean, his acting career is illustrious. He was in an infomercial about buying land in Nevada, as I recall.
Yeah, and you know who I've learned to really come to trust with all my heart? Tom Selleck. He wouldn't just sell you a refi on your home mortgage. No.
No. That is in terms of infomercials, that is an acting tour de force.
I believe him.
He sits down by the lake.
Yeah.
He sits in an Adirondack chair. He takes his hat off, and he really connects with the viewer on that commercial.
Yeah.
We got Stromer selling land. I feel like he was selling land, I say Nevada, and I think it was on the lake.
Estrada, you mean?
Yeah, I think he was selling it in trying to think where. Where was it?
What you don't see in that photo, it's just a picture of him in a sweater, like golf attire on above, but below he's got on the joggers and the riding boots from Chips. Am I right?
He was in what fucking lake is that in Nevada over there? Reno. I think he was selling the stuff in Reno. To think.
This place is incredible. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
I told you this guy can act.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Hot Springs Village.
Hell yeah.
This place is like a picture on a postcard. The natural beauty makes the perfect setting for plenty of activities. And let me tell you, Hot Springs Village has more amenities than most large cities.
You can be involved as much as you want to here in the village. There are so many clubs.
Where's Hot Springs City?
It's just fantastic with the things that we do here. I think there's over 140 clubs and activities that you can join, and everything from golfing to you name it. Genealogy, computer club.
I love Hot Springs Village. I love it.
There are 11 stock lakes where you can fish, boat, and do water sports. If you don't have a boat, that's okay. There are two marinas complete with everything from fishing poles to watercraft, so you can enjoy the crystal blue waters.
Sounds
if
sweet.
If you don't like to get your feet
me, wet, sign me up. Me and Maddie Fondelier in a cottage together on that beaches. Lake? Come on.
If you want to swim, the water is just like bathtub temperature.
In Hot Springs Village, fishing and boating is my passion.
There are marinas, freshwater beaches. There's something for everyone here in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas.
Oh, Arkansas.
Oh, the lakes are just beautiful, and the boating is wonderful. You can water ski.
That is
and
so close.
Fishing.
Yeah, pretty close.
Maybe it was just at night, and I was drunk, and I kept seeing lakes everywhere and pine trees, and I thought
that's right.
Here in Hot Springs Village,
must be in
our
Reno.
Lakes are not open to the general public, so we have
all right.
lakes here, so the fishing is excellent.
All right. So we all should have got a condo out there.
What I love about the way he delivered that stand-up, saying that stuff, he had his legs like in an athletic spread position, like he was ready to just like cover some guy in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just ready to pounce. That's how he delivered.
What are you working on, Stromer?
I am now working on demoing. I demoed my next job, which started, and what I revealed is that, you know, when you remodel, you often find that people in the past, it's like we've discovered an old civilization of poor craftsmen after mm-hmm. unearthing some dinosaur bone. You realize that they put a big 12, you know, 4x12 header over these sliding doors, which clearly the entire weight of the home's roof system is on this sagging, which is why they had a complaint for so many years with other people that their doors didn't operate properly. So I took the stucco off yesterday to reveal that this 4x12 beam, which is about 10 feet long, is sagging in a U, and it's down from level by like 2 inches in the center.
Really? That's a lot of sag on
a 4x12. It's a lot of sag, man. It's a lot of sag, and I'm concerned now because I got to bring in engineering, and I'm going to have to put a huge footing in, and, you know, it's a whole other job, basically. But, man, it's unbelievable, and, like, they didn't even use any Simpson stuff to tie off anything. It's just floating in this space, and, you know, people just screw you if you don't know what you're doing.
How old is the house?
It's not old enough to have that much of a problem. Like, it's only from the late 70s, maybe.
How big's the span? You said about 10 feet?
It's probably about 8 feet, I would say. 8 or 9 feet, something like that. And it's sitting on the trimmers are just floating around in there with, like, hardly any nails. Like, it's a nightmare.
Is there a second floor?
There is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 4x12 seems about enough for that span, but yeah.
Doesn't it?
They didn't use straps or any kind of steel or any of that Simpson stuff. They just didn't use that stuff back in the day at all.
No,
everything just got framed, 16 penny nails, toenail stuff in, you know.
That's
everything
right.
was basically gravity based, like put something underneath, you know, put a header up, put a trimmer under it. And through nail it through the king stud into the trim, into the header, and let the header just rest on top of the trimmer. There was no
and let the next guy in future generations, you know, fix the hell that will occur when I try and now make it right.
So the thing is sagging. It's got nothing to do with the king studs.
No, it's sagging, you know, the whole thing's sagging in the center. So my, you know, and it's sagging the exact way you don't want it to, realizing now that there's too much weight for that span.
So
I have to now build two walls on either side of it, get in there and remove it, dig footing, put a piece of steel across the top to do it the right way is basically what's going to happen now.
You sure you got to get under and do the footing or the pads?
I'm not, but just from, you know, I took all the stucco off yesterday and you know, just from my quick, you know, you get those little psychic feelings in your stomach, like, oh God, okay, here we go. I just feel like that's going to show up now.
But
there's a slab on grade, but I don't think it's an adequate footing for the amount of weight that's going to have to transfer.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to underpin that. You're going to
saw cut out this exactly saw cut that out and dig the footing and throw that in and then put the steel in there. I mean, it's like, God, really? Here we go. But you know, what are you going to do? You can't do anything different. What else can I do?
Well, you could probably dig under the existing slab and dowel it and put some pads under there and just leave the slab. I mean,
you think?
It's
a long way to dig.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to do it is to saw cut out a 2-foot by 2-foot square, dig down right. 2 foot, put some No. 4 steel in there, put one of those H 4x4 post holders in there, get your steel, I guess square steel,
yeah,
probably 4x8, 4x10 would be enough to go up there. You know, you got to kind of have the tabs welded onto the steel so you can attach it to the 4x.
Right.
You got to weld. I would recommend probably welding tabs in different places, or I would recommend taking a 2x4 and just screwing it onto the steel, the top, maybe the bottom, so that you can, you know, sink screws into it and put trimmers at the top. There's probably some trimmers at the top between the top plate and the top of the header, some small trimmers, I guess. Are there trimmers in between the top of the header?
No.
The header's all the way up?
There are trimmers that are, well, now this is interesting because the two of the trimmers in the center.
Hold on. It's not gone. Interesting to anyone who's listening, but it is interesting to us. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The people that are listening don't know what a fucking trimmer is.
Everybody's going,
yeah. Trimmers or, well, wait a minute. Is that a trimmer or is that a cripple?
I think it's a cripple. It's the cripple.
It's a cripple. Sorry. The trimmer. Yeah. The fuck are we calling trimmers? Is trimmers. Oh, trimmers next to the king stud, right?
Next to the king stud, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. There's cripples when you frame and you put a header in. There's usually a little space between the top of the header and the bottom of the double top plate on the height of the wall. And that would make for like a 6 or 8 inch cripple in there. The trimmer runs alongside the king stud. Sorry.
Let's check in with our own Matt and Gary to see if they're completely glazed over or do they find this to be riveting.
Gary knows what we're talking about.
He does?
Yes. I've decided. When you do a header, the top of the header, it doesn't go all the way up to the top of the ceiling or the top of the wall.
Yeah.
There's usually a double top plate, which is two flat 2x4s that are up there. And then there's a space between the top of the header and the bottom of the top plate, the top of the wall. And the cripples are little 2x4 studs you piece in there that always, by the way, explode in half when you take the nail gun.
Exactly.
And you try
They never really do anything. No, you
get the nail gun in there and you try to toenail them and you go ka-ching and it just blows in half and kicks out.
And then you cover it with drywall and run away.
And now at some point you decide, fuck it, I'll just take 2x4s flat and stack them up on top. But then there's 3/8 worth of space at the top. And you're thinking about, maybe I can get some particle board and shove that in there, or some OSB or plywood.
Which will rot and never work anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where I am. And that's probably what they did, because those are blown apart, and that's where the thing is sagging.
But if they're blown apart, then the header shouldn't be sagging. The top plate should be sagging.
Well, that's true, but what do you think it is? Could it be water that warped it? I can't imagine it would warp it that much.
Yeah.
And it doesn't see, there are no visual signs of that.
Yeah. You see your cripple? Yeah, Gary's putting up a picture of the cripple.
If the people could only see this at home, it would make them book. This is the greatest thing they've ever heard.
They can if they go to aceontheroof.com.
Yeah,
and
they can.
Jack stud is what we call a trimmer out here on the West Coast.
That's right.
That's not what I call it.
Take it easy.
The let's see, John 37, Iowa's got a garage drain issue. John, let's see, did I pop
John
him up?
Killed himself because of our cripple
hammer talk. John.
Hey, you guys got me?
Hi, Guy.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Hey, I own half of a duplex, and the other half is rented out. And the way that the house is constructed is there's one-car garages for each house that is just built on one single concrete slab, and in between is drywall.
Mm-hmm.
And the garage has no drain. So particularly being here in the Midwest, you drive a snow-covered, ice-covered vehicle in there, it all melts off, and then it just pools, you know, against the drywall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gap underneath it. Pardon?
That is so lame that the builder did that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's...
John built the place. So.
You know, the house is about 40 years old.
Yeah.
So just wondering what options you guys may have for something like that.
Well, no. Short of installing a drain and cutting your concrete slab and running it out, I would get a push broom. And whenever you leave, your wife pushes the water out into the outside of the garage.
They have those push squeegee things, too.
That is our interim solution, but I was wondering if there's any more permanent thing I could do that wouldn't break the bank.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're talking about saw cutting at this point, and, you know, you can rent one of those wet saws that you push along, you know, like one of those little chalkers used to chalk a football field in high school. You know, you can do your saw cut. I mean, your slab's going to be 4 inches thick, maybe a little bit thicker if it's the garage, but I doubt it if I know this place. So, you know, you get your floor-mounted drain. You'd have to go with the French drain style, like the long in-ground style, right? Like, you wouldn't want to go with just a single round drain in the middle.
Yeah, and then you're going to have to find, you know, grade that's like a quarter inch per foot. So by the time you get out of the garage, you're going to be, let's say you put the drain in the center of the garage, you're going to be like, you know, close to 8 inches down in terms of an angle going from the bottom of the drain outside. And where do you go from there? You know what I mean?
So those drains we're talking about, the long drains with the grill on top, those drains are stepped down internally.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So if you guys, I don't know, Gary, find me a picture of a, I don't know, what do we call this?
Is the garage graded so that all the water goes to the center, like they did pitch it, but then they didn't put a drain where the wall is now? Is that what they did?
I don't know if it's intentional or not, but that's what happens. Yeah, it all runs to the middle.
And, well, and are you sure there's no, I wonder if there's a drain buried under the wall that they never, you know, that they decide at the last minute to throw walls in there to make it two garages separately. I wonder if there's already a drain.
I don't know. But if it all pitches toward the center, then you could just go with one of those floor drains or maybe just run one of those long French drains. Is that a French drain? Or am I screwing that up?
Yeah, no, that's right. But see, what
I believe
what
it's called
you're
a freedom drain?
Freedom drain. Sorry, freedom fries, freedom doors, freedom drain.
No, but he's going to then have to saw cut from, you know, come to the, like he'll come out from the center wall like 4 inches to intercept before it gets to the drywall. Then it'll have to go clear the garage door itself. So actually you'd have to come away from the center wall at least 4 inches from the side of the opening of the garage door. Do you know what I mean? Because you're going to have to saw cut all the way out into the driveway.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass,
I'd say get it. Spend $22. Get one of those squeegee floor mops that not only has the squeegee, but each end tips in at 45 degrees. So it kind of corrals the water and does it that way. Brian, 38, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Guy.
Hi, Guy.
Oh.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, how are you doing?
Good, good, thanks. Hey, I have a quick question. Novice here. I'm trying to find a stud inside my wall. It's in an apartment unit, obviously, so I don't want to do anything invasive. And I don't have, like, a digital stud finder or nothing like that for the purposes of hanging up a wall mount for a flat-screen TV. Is it as simple as just kind of knocking on the wall, listening for the dullness or the echoness, so to speak, of the wall?
Yes.
I did this yesterday in my daughter's room. I hung a mirror. I got my finger out. I always sniff it before I put it onto the wall, and then I tap. Yeah, you'll feel it, and you'll hear it. You'll feel it, and you'll hear it. The TV's
and
pretty...
For some, go ahead. I was going to say, for some reason, if you can't hear a distinction in the thud, then you could always measure from a corner and sort of come out 16 inches, you know, every 16 inches, ostensibly there will be a stud if the framing was done correctly.
On center, but you don't always know what side they started the layout from, left or right, you know?
Right.
And is that going to be true structurally as far as houses versus apartments?
Yes. It'll all be the same. It'll be 16 on center. But here's what I would do, all right? You ready, Brian?
Yeah.
With a Y. What I would do is I would get some blue tape out and I would mark out the perimeter of the TV set on the wall. Just lay it out so you know here's the height it's going to be, right to left. Here's where I want it. Okay. Then I would find out where I want the mount, like in the middle of this thing, a little up, a little down. How does it coincide with that physical mounting of the TV set versus the mount itself? I would work that out. Then I would take the finger out and I would tap.
Jesus, like a human drum you are.
Yes. And I would find the stud. Then I would get my drill and put a very small bit on it, you know, 3/16 or, 3/32 or something small, very thin.
Small enough just to probe what you're doing just to make sure that the stud is in fact.
Then I would just drop it in, making sure, obviously, it's within the perimeter of the TV set and hidden. It'll be hidden by the mount, obviously.
By the way, that's genius what you just said.
Really?
Because then you're contained within a non-visual place, and you can go ahead and put as many holes as you need to find the wood.
Right.
Very smart. Very good solution.
And find it. Thank you. And little wood will come out on the drill bit. Obviously, if you miss the stud, it'll just drop in. It'll go in 5/8 and then kind of pop through the wall. Do that, and then drill one half an inch next to it just to make sure you're in the center of the stud. You're not just catching the edge of the stud. You know what I mean?
And you can also see or smell the bit to know that you're in the wood. Like it'll smell like pine, basically.
Yeah, so and you'll see a little dusting of wood shavings on it. Yeah. Then, once you establish that, if you want to, you could put a little 2-inch finish nail in there, tap. Have it in there. Then you could hook your tape onto that and you'll know it'll be 16 on center to the right or to the left. Once you find that stud, you'll know where the other studs are. After that,
a lot of times with those TV mounts, they give you the play so that you don't have to necessarily be centered, right?
That
you can have the bolt, you know, slide in a groove right or left.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine.
After that, use your little lags, your little hex head lags that are 3 inches long that come with the thing. Get a hex driver on like an impact drill, or you could do it with a ratchet by hand, but drill that pilot hole. You do not want to just try to drive that thing into the stud. It'll strip out the top. It'll be a pain in the ass. It'll be too much work on your shoulders, and it'll probably crack the stud up. So drill that pilot hole. All right.
Gotcha.
And also then and level your TV holder. Put one of the bolts in and then hold the thing up with a little tiny torpedo level.
Right.
And mark with a pencil what is level, and that's where your second hole goes.
All right. Let me just – we got Gary Collins on hold. I'm going to talk to him in a second. Andrew, 32, Amarillo, Texas, had a cold water break in his bathtub. Wants advice on the best way to go about fixing it without taking the bathtub out, obviously. Andrew?
Yeah. So
– you got tile in there?
Yeah. I don't know if it'd be better to take – tiles off and then go in through the wall. And then
can you get around to the back of the wall? Like, is there a divider there with a toilet on the other side and drywall that you could take off to get to the back of it?
So that would be what I'd have to do, I think. I mean, the house is pier and beam, so mm-hmm. there is a way under the house.
I would say we got a guest on hold, Andrew, so I'm going to make it quick.
Yeah.
I would look under the house first things first. I would try to figure it out, and I would then go around to any wall that didn't mean I had to remove either tile or stucco. And then once you do that, you can repair it, probably copper pipe. You could also switch to a PEX type system as well. And I might think about if I took off the drywall on the other side, the back side of the wall, instead of replacing all of the drywall, I might think about putting in an access door there if shit ever goes down in the future, I should say. Gary Collins is our guest. He's the author of the book series, The Simple Life. He's the host of the podcast, Your Better Life, and he's encouraging people to live in a more rural, off-the-grid type homes. He's doing a sort of grid-adjacent home. Right now, he's designing homes that where you can live and you can get off the grid. He's also a former federal agent, has worked for the U.S. State Department of the Diplomatic Security Service, and has that experience in his background. Worked for the Food and Drug Administration. Good to see you, Gary.
Hey, Ace. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling me Ace. So let's talk about this new grid adjacent. Well, let's define grid adjacent first.
Well, what do you mean by grid adjacent? Because I'm doing something similar to that right now, but my house is all off grid.
Oh, all off grid.
Yeah. The one I'm doing right now is going to be grid tied.
And repeat that term again, please.
Grid tied. So I'll have the switch to flip it, but my infrastructure will all be mine. My well, septic, and the only thing I'm running is power. Power is not to the property, but I'm going to run it to the property.
And
I'll flip it, and I'll be able to go off grid.
Where are the best places to get off the grid? For instance, if you want to produce power and you want to do it via solar, maybe there's some places that are less advantageous than others, or maybe there's something to do with well water. What are some of the best places and states to get off the grid?
I would say on the west side of the United States, just because of for solar. I've messed around with wind. Wind is tricky. Unless you have a stream or something, water running through your property, which hydro is really, really good if you have a consistent flow and good flow. But I'd say the west side of the U.S., Arizona is an easy one. You know, I have a house in Washington, though that's my claim to fame, the one I built up there. But I know a lot of people, Montana, Utah, Idaho. So that part of the country I know is better for solar.
And hey, Gary, what's the advantage of being grid tied just in case you need to have power and you can't get it from your alternative energy source? Is that why?
Yeah, Stromer, it is. It's for me, I didn't want to have two houses off the grid. I'm getting old. Yeah. So I like warmer weather. And I have to leave there for the winter. It's at the top of a mountain, and it's dangerous to be up there in the winter. I've gotten stuck in November, and you get stuck up on the top of a mountain. I got no way to get gas, anything. I'm stuck. I mean, there's no way to get out. But foot. So, yeah, it's advantageous to where I can flip a switch. If I want to go off and do it, I can do it. It'll be interesting. I've never done this before, a grid tied. And I'm in a place that you can still sell back the extra electricity, which is pretty rare today.
Where are we at with solar technology and battery storage technology? And are we at such a place where they talk about those power walls? I've mm-hmm. looked into it a little bit. Tesla makes one, but I think Hitachi or some company like
Panasonic
that.
Panasonic makes one.
Mitsubishi yeah. or something. You know, they make them, but when you really start talking price, it's tens of thousands of dollars, at least on a bigger home. Where are we going with that? What do you think about the solar tiles versus the solar panels? And tell us what you know.
Yeah, my system up there is not that big in my house in Washington. And people who walk in never even know it's off the grid. You know, I'm not pooping in a bucket. You know, I have normal water. I have bathrooms. It's a normal house. But my walls are 14 inches thick. A little different. But I think I have 12 panels. 10 are usable. 2 are flat for the snow so I can trickle charge my batteries. I leave it so you have to use old battery technology, which is your lead acid, because they can go below zero.
Mm-hmm.
The technology in batteries is phenomenal today. And if Elon Musk is listening, I want to use some of your stuff on my new house. So.
Gary, he is listening. He's sitting next to me now. Go ahead.
Perfect then. He can just mail it to me. But I've looked into the tiles. They look phenomenal. They are really expensive. But for people who are looking to get started, you can start a small system for like $5,000.
And then what are you doing with your walls for the thickness?
That was my question. Those walls.
Yeah.
Well, I know, Ace, you're familiar with ICFs. So I use a product called Fazwall, and it was it's a green product. So it's 85% wood chip, 15% concrete. It's fireproof. It's light. It's like Lego blocks is how I put it. It has 3-inch foam on the outer facing part of the brick. And, I think it's, what is it? R30? Out of the box, or R24, but I'd stacked mine. So I ended up 2x4 framing the inside of my house as well. So I have double layer insulation, but yeah,
that becomes the facade on the exterior of the framing. I see. Wow.
And it's very interesting product though, because here's the thing I did not know. Cause my contractor, go figure, was an idiot. I've been doing this stuff as Ace knows. I know you come with your background. I used to listen to you way back in the day. Real very familiar with your show, that it's imperfect. So you have to choose which side you want flat.
Mm-hmm.
So you either choose the inside of your house or you choose the outside. There's no both because they're formed and they don't form perfectly the way they make them. And my contractor decided to do the outside of the house. And so my inside was imperfect. Well, I couldn't hang sheetrock onto it. And it's tricky because he just didn't know what he was talking about. It's easier to.
So wait, so then are you relegated to sort of an Adobe look then, if that's the exterior wall, or can it be smooth trowel and whatever you want to have it look
like? Preferably the easier way is to stucco it. But what I did is I wanted to make it look, I didn't want a stucco house on the top of a mountain. That's just,
yeah.
It'd look kind of stupid. So I did, I ended up doing 7.5 siding. I used Hardy Backer siding because I wanted fireproof as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it took a lot of work to true that up and to shim it up. I think we spent 3 weeks just to do it. And it's not a very big house, just to get it true enough to where we could put it on.
So what is this product called again? And is it it's modular, right?
Yeah.
And it comes in like block form, correct?
Yeah. They ship it to you in pallets.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes in a pallet. I believe they're all made in Oregon still, but it's FASWALL.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they do today because I bought this stuff years ago, but it's still around. I mean, I've talked to the sales guy over the years, but it's a really good product, but it's not the only one. There's more than one. There's different types.
And it's good structurally.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that it's got a hollow cavity in it. Do you blow some insulation in there? Like once you've stacked everything together, do you fill that? Do you backfill it?
No, that's what makes it really interesting. It works like cinder block,
mm-hmm.
but the caveat is that the way you, cause the joints, you're not using a mortar joint. So what happens is you actually use a low spread foam, and you can use open cell or closed cell. Doesn't matter, but most people use the fire retardant sealer foam for it. And you do the outline in your bricks, and then you push them together. Then you rebar it, and you have to fill it with concrete for structural integrity.
Oh, for structural integrity.
Okay, gotcha.
So the footing.
There's something, you know, there's something to be said. You know, when I saw the picture of your house, just the feeling of liberation from quote unquote the power man, like screw you, power guy, would be so appealing to know that you're never dealing with the utility company. To me, that just seems great.
Well, and up there, we get bad windstorms, and we'll get some storms that will knock power out. The only time I know the power's out, I overlook a lake, and the lake's dark. It's just black. That's the only time I know the power's out.
Right.
Do you have a generator?
I do. You by code, you have to have a backup generator, but I have a portable, which I used to build my house. I spent like $500-$600 on this thing a decade ago. I still use it to this day. You know, the ones you put in like, what's the main brand? Generac.
Generac.
Yeah. Generac, yeah.
The problem with off-grid application with those is once you install them to an off-grid application, the warranty's void. They're not made for that. Yeah.
But so that's terrible. They say by code you need a backup generator.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, of some sort. It doesn't have to be permanent. It doesn't have to be put to a slab. Mm-hmm. They just, when they came out to inspect me, the inspector came out and he was like this. I built it all to code. I have the only off-grid house in the county to code to include my electrical system was certified by the county. So I have all my stickers and everything. I got an owner occupancy certificate, the whole bit.
And are you like teaching their inspectors what is possible, or do they already know this in their code systems?
No, it was kind of new, and a lot of people came out. I worked hand in hand with the inspector, though. There's only one
in
that area, and he would come out, and he's a smart guy. I mean, he was a former builder, and I over-engineer everything, and he knew it. I always do that. So he would come out and look around and go, you're good. Or he would go, you need to do this, this, and this. But he was unfamiliar. I don't think he'd ever inspected a Faswell house. He may have done one. It's the same.
I don't know much about wells. Is there well potential just about everywhere, or do you have to sort of choose your site carefully?
Yeah, yes and no. The well companies, the way it works is they can do a survey. They have a database. They can pull everything up in your area, and they can tell you how deep the wells are, what their, gallons per minute are. You know, they can give you static lines. They have all of it. They have all the information. So you're not shooting in the dark. But you guys were like this. I actually had my site witched as well. And the guy was dead on.
You mean the guy with the stick? What's it called? The
divining rod.
Divining rod. Yeah, that's amazing.
And the guy just wanted, he was a local, and he said, hey, do you mind if I come up and witch your site? And went, nah, if you want to come up, knock yourself out. He was literally 5 feet away from where we drilled.
Really?
It was amazing. Yeah.
Did he have a divining rod?
I don't know. I can't remember what he had. They were witching rods. I mean, they're real. He didn't just make them. He did make them.
How much turquoise was he wearing?
A lot. No, he was definitely, he was like me. We call ourselves redneck hippies. So, no, he was really good, though. He wasn't, one of those guys out there, didn't come in robes or anything. He was a normal guy, boots, jeans, and said, hey, let's try it. And sure enough, dead on.
Once you locate and find the water and get the water up to your, situation that you're using it for, does the county know that it's safe to drink, or that there's toxic stuff in it, or arsenic, or they know this?
By code, you have to have your water tested.
How is your quality of water?
Oh, it's outstanding. I grew up in Lone Pine, so I grew up on well water from the mountains, and it's pristine. We tested it. There's the particulates, of course, it's coming out of the ground, but you'll like this. I have zero filters. I run it just straight from the well through a pressure tank. No sediment.
Wow.
Yeah. It wow. is amazing.
And ostensibly, it's like a lifetime of water, or do they know how long it's going to last for you?
Well, in most cases, I grew up on wells, so I was fairly familiar with them. But yeah, I mean, unless someone drains aquifer, unless you get some farmer next to you who's draining the aquifer, yeah, you can run out of water. Aquifers do run dry.
Yeah.
But it's rare.
You know, what do you know about solar and these battery walls, these storage mm-hmm. walls? Because I feel like we've been talking about this for a long time. But the price just hasn't come down to the point where it makes sense for most people. You know, I have talked to guys about it. I've dabbled in it. I've had ideas about it. But most of the stuff is like, this is going to pay for itself in 71 years. Now, this is a big house I'm living in.
Yeah.
It's not a small house. And so there are things that are at play. Tesla has increased the Powerwall price twice in the last 5 months, so says Gary. There's got to be, or is there going to be, some technology, some breakthrough that brings it down? Like, you know, you take something like a digital watch. The first generations of digital watches, you held a button down, the time would come up and there were $300, you know, at some point, 17 years later, you got a free watch when you filled up with gas at the Arco station. So the technology was utilized and the price just came down. Is there anything looming in the future for solar? Or is there a different kind of technology that we're not aware of yet?
It's changed drastically in the last couple of years. When I originally bought my panels, I think I was paying $300, $350 a panel for a 300-watt panel. Now they're around $325. They've gone up a little bit in wattage, but those are the traditional panels, right? They're not the pretty tiles or anything like that. They're the traditional old-school panels. I bought the last two that I made a little mobile spot. I just did it for fun. Paid $150 for them. And they were considered what they would say scratch and dent. You couldn't tell. You literally couldn't tell. And those were from Canada. I think all mine have been from Canada. But those are coming way down. So it's cheaper to add panels than to add batteries almost at this point. But the battery technology recently changed. Now they have lithium ion storage batteries that are fantastic, and they're not that expensive. They work really well. They're far smaller and lighter than your lead acid, for sure. But the downside is they can't take the temperature variation of a lead acid battery. There's the, what do they call them? The nickel, cadmium or something, the nickel batteries, but those are super expensive. But the lithium has come way, way down. So I honestly, it's hard because once you get into a big system, the price jumps drastically because you also have to daisy chain things and you have to buy bigger components. So it adds to the price. But, you know, I've seen really big mansions do a complete system for about $100,000. I mean, big 4,000 plus square foot cabins.
Yeah.
That's around $100,000.
So getting off the grid, I don't know. I feel like now more than ever, I've been telling everybody, especially with all the COVID and the lockdown and Trump and politics, like, you got to get out. You got to get in the woods. You got to take a hike. You have to start a project. You know, you need to be engaged. You can't just sit on your phone and tell people to fuck off on Twitter. You have to start a project. Once you start a project, especially a project like this that has so many different components and challenges to it, it just occupies you. You just don't sit around wringing your hands, wondering what's wrong with society. You just get involved in it, and it occupies you. And I would encourage everyone to get a project going. I don't think there's enough people heading out to the garage or even building a freestanding garage. But if you think about, it's a little thought experiment, and I'll pose it to Stromer, but you think about it. During times I've been knee deep in a project, like really engaged in a project, those have been some of the most even times I've ever had, like emotionally. And because you just don't sit around and have times to fret and lick your wounds and all that kind of stuff. You're constantly either physically doing the project or you're not doing the project and you're trying to work something out for the next day. Like it's a constant, you guys know that feeling of like, oh, the guys are coming tomorrow. I got to get this stuff ready. Like I got to have all this stuff in place.
And you know what else you could, I was actually thinking about this yesterday because, you know, when the whole shutdown lockdown first occurred, I redid my yard because I was sort of relegated to the compound I live on. And you, not only do you have constant thought about what the next step is, which engages your mind, keeps you from going crazy, but you also form new relationships with people who you're trying to learn information from who are like-minded. So it ends up being like a healthy community and your psychology is inherently better. There's no question.
Yeah.
100%.
And,
it keeps you engaged for sure. I mean, and I did a lot of it, with one helper.
Oh, really?
That was it.
It's
yeah,
good.
Just me and him.
And you know what? When you do then go out and interact with the real world and go to a dinner party, it's a great conversation. I mean, it's so It's such an interesting conversation, especially when you start getting into the off the grid part of it, except for the part where they think you're a white supremacist. But other than that, it's an awesome conversation.
Yeah, I've been asked that numerous times. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let me give you.
Also, I think it's really nice to be able to live on a property where you can actually take a shotgun and fire it in the air a couple of times when you're drunk on tequila and nobody knows.
Yeah.
That's always helpful.
But I don't know what you're talking about, Stromer.
I've
no idea.
I found for legal reasons you have to yell "go on, get" as loud as you can before you fire the shotgun so the neighbors don't think you're just drunk firing it into the air. The author is Gary Collins. The book is The Simple Life, and the podcast is also Your Better Life. And the website is thesimplelifenow.com. Go there, learn about living off the grid, but also learn about your health, finding purpose, freeing up your finances, all things that are super, super relevant these days. Gary, thanks for listening, and thanks for being a guest on our show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ace. Appreciate it.
We'll have you
See
back.
You, Gary.
We'll have you back soon for a follow-up. Thanks, Gary. All right.
Hey, speaking of finances, I got to ask a question. Do you own or do you rent your home? Well, sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. Now, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing too. Why? Because you already have so much to do around your home. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico. Easy. That's right. GEICO. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right. February 26th, 27th, Oklahoma City, Bricktown Comedy Club. Then we got March 25th, Kansas City, Arvest Bank Theater. And then back to the beautiful Royal Oak in Michigan. That's March 26th. May 6th, Waukegan, Illinois, in the Genesee Theater. Go to adamcarolla.com and find out where I'm going to be. And you can check out my stand-up at my YouTube page, youtube.com/Adam Carolla. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Gary Collins and Stromer saying mahalo.
Subscribe on iTunes or visit aceontheroof.com.
This is Corolla Digital.